Welcome to Coach Me, the podcast for women who want more. More clarity, more confidence, more you. We're Tanu and Catherine, friends, working moms, businesswomen, and real-life coaching buddies.
Each week, we cut the BS and bring you insights, tools, and truth bombs that help you show up stronger at work, at home, and in life. If we can coach each other through the chaos,
we can coach you too.
Welcome back to episode 8 of Coach Me. Today, we're diving into a trending but polarizing topic that's been all over the media and our feeds lately. The default parent divorce. You've probably seen the headlines. More women are walking away from unequal partnerships. Why? Because if they're already doing everything, you know, the childcare, the emotional labor, the birthday presents, the mental load, then they might as well do it in peace.
Yep. Seems like more women are asking that question now than ever before. We've read the think pieces, I'm sure you have too, and we've lived some of it too, right? But this episode isn't about blaming or bashing anyone or anything. It's really about unpacking the why behind the resentment, the quiet breakdown of connection, and what can be done before you default to that divorce, right?
Yep. And here's the truth. Some relationships are toxic, unsafe, or unsalvageable. And when that's the case, the bravest and healthiest thing you can do is to walk away.
But for others, where the love is still there, but the workload, the resentment, the communication, they are all way out of sync, then it's worth asking, have we stopped being a team? And what can I own in this too? That is what we will be exploring today. Are you ready for it?
So before we go into the juicy bits, let's look into the stats. Worldwide, approximately 40% of marriages end in divorce, with most divorces happening at around 7 to 15 years of marriage. And women initiate nearly 70% of these divorces. And according to several studies, household labor, not just infidelity or incompatibility, is a major source of resentment and tension, which then can lead to separation. Generally speaking, though, lack of commitment to the partner or lack of prioritizing the relationship, as well as communication issues, are amongst the key reasons for divorce.
And I just want to emphasize that approximately 40% of first marriages end in divorce. However, it's 60% of second marriages that end in divorce. So we don't seem to learn much. I was also curious to look into what happens after divorce. And there was a Stanford study that found that only 12% of divorced women regret the decision. But over 30% say that they repeated the same patterns in their next relationship. That's crazy, isn't it? But why is that happening? Why do we repeat those patterns? And research suggests it's because we don't always deal with our inner dynamics. And you know, the book, The Gift, that I've been talking about before, says it very nicely. Here it goes. Only you can decide whether a relationship depletes or empowers you. But you can't know the truth about your relationships until you deal with your own wounds. So this is our take on this topic. Divorce can be freedom, but it's not a fix-all. If you're in a toxic or abusive situation, obviously leaving most probably is the right move. We are not here to judge, recommend, or anything like that. But if the core issue is resentment over chores or an emotional disconnect or communication struggle, there may still be work worth doing. So that's what we want to explore with you today. So let's talk about being the default parent, because I've been there and I am there. After my divorce, I realized something though. If I wanted more time or space for myself, I have to prioritize myself more. The problem wasn't just the lack of support from my partner during the marriage, but also the lack of boundaries that I had set. And I know this has been a topic across several of our podcasts, talking about overwhelm, work-life balance, perfectionism, setting boundaries, prioritizing, putting ourselves onto that to-do list, right? Us women, we have to stop trying to do it all. And not because no one else is doing anything, but because doing it all or trying to do it all comes at a price. The price of our mental health, our physical well-being, and our sanity. So therefore, for me, healing after the divorce also included reconnecting with myself. And I needed more boundaries. That was for sure, especially having children, having a career, having a rich kind of socialized family and the rest of it. I needed stronger boundaries or new boundaries. But more than that, I needed to stop ignoring my limit when my energy was depleted. And doing that in the name of being everything to everyone, I kept going further than I could just to prove something. And that was just not the right thing to do. And I had to learn that. And if you haven't checked it out yet, that's also what my course is all about, my online course. Guiding you from chaos to clarity to reconnect with yourself. The link is in our show notes. And bonus, you don't have to be divorced to take the course. But, you know, the skills you learn and that you will gain from the course will be something you gain for yourself, no matter what life throws at you.
That is so powerful, Kathy. What you said about boundaries really hits home. And it's something that we've been bringing up in our previous episodes as well. And of course, your course helps you reconnect with yourself and understand how to set these boundaries better. What comes to mind when you say that is whether you're single, partnered, or somewhere in between, if you're constantly last on your own list, that's not sustainable. And it's interesting because I see this in the corporate world as well. I can't help but make that connection between the patterns I see with the A-type women who carry the weight of everything. At work, they have this idea of perfection and they want things done a certain way. They want everything under control. They're so good at carrying the weight at home as well, and they end up being the default parent. And what that results in is an ultimate burnout. So you know how we internalize this idea that asking for help is weakness? That shows up a lot in these perfectionist A-type women. And yes, that keeps the house running and the career alive and the kids thriving. But they believe that if they ask for help, it's their weakness and it's a part of the job that they're supposed to do. And while the partner is not picking up the slack and doing more, they start building resentment in the process because your brain starts to compare and look, I'm doing so much and the other person's not doing their bit. And then at some point it starts feeling unfair. So there's two things happening at the same time. On the outside, you're so goal-oriented and you're going for it. You're getting shit done day in and day out. And on the inside, you're building this resentment and you're expecting less and less from your partner. And the less you expect, the less they deliver. And they also get into the default of not doing the work because their expectation from you is that you're going to pick up that side of things. And then you end up getting stuck in this vicious cycle. So at some point, you have to think, is this vicious cycle of being a default parent being perpetuated by you? Because the resentment starts small and at some point it gets to a level where even if they're breathing next to you, it annoys you.
I love that. I mean, breathing next to me, don't even dare, right? I love the point about perceiving asking for help as weakness. Because you see these strong, ambitious women with their endless to-do list, having all these plates up in the air kind of thing. What do you think, Tanu, why is it that asking for help is perceived as a weakness? Is that like a male dominant kind of alpha male behavior type of thing that women copy? Or is that because nobody can reach the standard? Why do you think successful women or ambitious women don't like to ask for help?
It might have something to do with our testosterone levels. Just kidding. You never know. There might be some correlation there. but it's not just women. If you know the anecdotes about how men don't like asking for directions, it is something that triggers that feeling that you are less than if you ask for help. You couldn't do it. The self-judgment comes up immediately. And why couldn't I do it? So people that are high achievers, they're constantly evaluating how good they are at certain tasks. And when they're not able to do something and they have to reach out for help, it's not seen as, oh yeah, I'm just getting assistance. It's seen as, I couldn't do it. That's why I'm reaching out to someone else. So I am less competent and the person I'm reaching out to is more competent than me. And that's where it makes it hard, because you have this very high self-esteem, sense of self about getting things done, because you're so goal-oriented. You're always checking off the tasks. You're always getting shit done. So whenever you get stuck on something, it's not a natural thing to go and ask for help, because that really hits your sense of self and you end up questioning your own competence.
So that's definitely something we need to reframe, right? One of the basic things to reframe is, going back to the topic of this podcast, of the default parent divorce and like the chores being distributed unevenly in relationships, which is the assumption here, then if we don't dare asking for help because we are high achievers and we perceive it as a weakness or that we are not good enough, then that goes down to a fear of being incompetent, of not being worthy of love. That rabbit hole of, if I ask for help, that means I'm exposing myself. I'm showing that I can't do it. I'm showing weakness to someone who might make fun of me, might judge me for it. All those fears come up. So it's no wonder that high-achieving women who have high standards and that kind of perfectionism drive and are very goal-oriented in everything you describe, that they are also the ones who like are the financially independent ones who then say, well, I'd rather divorce than show weakness, because then going for divorce is a perceived act of strength. Maybe I'm rather alone and choose solitude or like doing really everything on my own than being weak and asking for help or breaking down or showing my struggles openly and
absolutely
being open to be judged.
Yeah.
That is crazy, huh?
Uh-huh.
That's just
a
something
great point. Uh-huh.
As a high achiever or as someone who's very ambitious, like I would not want to be found out to have a weakness, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'd
yeah.
rather divorce before exposing myself. So I think that is a big point here that is maybe overseen in the press, because it's a very specific demographic group that is affected by this, the financially independent, yet perfectly capable to do it all. You know, nobody asks about the burnout further down the road, but you're currently feeling capable to do all the chores and you're capable to handle the finances. So you rather go for the divorce than the exposure.
Mm-hmm. And this goes so many layers deep as well. There's obviously the kind of partners you choose, right? Then the question comes up, why do independent women choose partners that are, I don't know, not, I wouldn't say lazy, but that slack on certain important areas in life? So that happens a lot too. And you mentioned a great point. It is a two-pronged problem here. There's the internal self-judgment. You want to be competent. It's your own self-identity, your self-worth attached to it. And then the fear of exposing yourself to the other person and looking incompetent to them, even though that person's not even doing half as much as you. But you still have that fear of judgment from them. That's crazy, right? But there's a saying that the best way to make someone responsible is to trust them with responsibility. So the less you trust your partner with responsibility, the less responsible they get. And you don't realize it. You're training them to get lazy by picking up the slack every time. And you have such a need for perfection sometimes that even when they're doing things, you end up not liking their way of doing it. And then instead of delegating next time, you're like, I'd rather get it done myself. And then you get mad at them for not doing it to your standard. And the next time, not even doing it at all. And yeah, there you are, complaining about how the dishes are loaded in dishwasher or how the clothes are put away. Because no matter how successful we are outside, we have all these things that need to be done, especially as parents.
And when we feel a lot of pressure and feel really stressed, we really have no leeway or understanding for that flexibility of things being done in a different way because mm-hmm. we needed them exactly that way, or we needed things to look orderly or be exactly done at that time or whatever it is. And the partner might not always either know about the time frames or specs attached to every task, or might just not find them as valuable as us. If they take the liberty to do things as they please, then that can also obviously lead to disagreements. Yeah. And you talked about when you start not liking the way they breathe next to you. Do you know that moment when you hate the way he squeezes the toothpaste or the sweatpants he's worn 3 days in a row? They suddenly send you spiraling. It is obviously not about the toothpaste. It's a signal. And funnily enough, I don't know if this is just in Germany, but like there's a toothpaste brand called Signal in Germany. I don't know. I mean, the signs were there all along. But if you come to a point in a relationship where judgment has replaced curiosity, where the fear of exposing yourself for weakness, of needing help or requiring that help, rather than it being normal part of your communication to discuss chores and things that are due, then you are in a spiral. If there's more judgment and more fear in a relationship and that blocks you from communicating, and there's not that openness and curiosity and interest and common understanding, like we are a team type of feeling, then that's a sign that something is really off balance. And what we've touched on is that oftentimes what we're really craving isn't help with chores, but it's partnership. It's that team feel, the acknowledgement, and also for the other person to really want us to have some space to breathe again, or the other person wanting us to relax or noticing us, how we are stressed and wanting to take some of that pressure off of us. So I think if we're really honest and dare to show a little bit of that weakness, those are the things that are under that surface of judging and not admitting that we need help.
Mm-hmm. I love how you go deep into the mind work that's required. I wish we had a man here to give us an additional perspective, but I did read something about what it triggers in a man. So silly things like how the toothpaste is squeezed out or the dishwasher is loaded. What that does to the woman is it brings up this anger and resentment about, this is such a silly thing. Can he not do just this much? Like, how hard is it for him to just load it properly? I do so much. And what do you do then? You start criticizing. You start telling them off for doing things a certain way that are not up to standard. What that does to a man is they shrink, they withdraw, they go quiet. Well, sometimes it ends up in a big blowout and like a huge fight. But on the inside, when you have a partner that's so high achieving, you also put them on a pedestal and you see them a certain way. And when you get constant criticism from that partner about small little things that are small to you, but not to them, you start losing that respect in the relationship. And you just get this feeling that no matter what I do, I can never make her happy. No matter what I do, I could never match up to her standard. And that makes the man withdraw even more. And the more silent they go on you, the more resentment you build again. You're like, okay, now that I'm complaining about all these things, he doesn't even care to respond or do something about it. Why isn't he changing? Why isn't he improving? And then you associate that with the love that they have for you. And you're like, they don't love me enough. They don't respect me enough.
It's really beautiful how you put it, because there's a lot of work Brené Brown does around that. The whole daring greatly, being the man in the arena, putting yourself out there, saying to your partner, when you don't unload the dishwasher by the time our guests arrive, the story that I'm telling myself is that you don't care about me because I made such an effort to have a nice welcoming home ready for our guests. And I asked you this one thing to unload the dishwasher and you didn't do it. So that shows me that you don't care about what I'm doing here. You don't care about the effort I put in, and that you don't care that this means a lot to me. And when you put it across like that as an I message, as a bit of vulnerability, and show kind of your interpretation of the event rather than being like, you did it wrong, or like biting the head off type of anger. There's always another emotion under anger, right? Anger is a lazy emotion, I always call it. And anger always covers up the real emotion. And often it's a pain, right? Like it covers up pain, like fear or something like that. And if we dare to say like what it really does to us when they don't do what we ask them, or when they don't help, or when we rush around like crazy and they watch their football game or that kind of stuff. If we just say, here's the story that I'm telling myself, why you do it, is that really true? Does it align with what you're really feeling? Then I think more often than not, we'd be surprised about what our partners will say back at us. Like, you know, you nagging me about the dishwasher. This is the story I'm telling myself. I'm not good enough and I don't know what I was meant to be doing. Maybe they're there to be open then as well. So maybe this can actually open up into some honest conversation if we just dare to open up that little bit more.
Wow, I just learned so much in the last 1 minute. I'm definitely trying that
next time. I saved your marriage, admit it.
Thank you. I needed to hear that.
But it's nice, right? Like we need to look at the emotion under the anger, under the resentment. We need to lean into that inner voice. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's quite dangerous to lean onto chores apps or lists like that, like comparing lists and being the guard of the chores balance, because it's not about having the equal number of chores on the list or about today I do the bins, tomorrow you do the bins type of thing. It's not about the 50-50, but it is about the awareness and the showing that initiative and being on the same team, like pursuing the same goal, right? Like in a relationship, you should be after the same goal of growing the relationship and doing good things for the other person. And I just don't think that app tracking, like, you know, those apps that track chores, that those can replace real communication and empathy and that kind of curiosity for each other's lives. I just don't think apps do that. All right. And that is where we're hitting pause for now. But we're not done. This conversation got so rich and real that we decided to split it into two episodes. So far, we've unpacked the growing trend of the default parent divorce, looked at surprising divorce stats, and explored the deeper reasons behind repeated relationship patterns. We also got into why courageous, non-blaming communication and not scorekeeping is the real game changer in modern partnerships. Next week, we are picking things back up right where we left off with a nice little debate about chores apps, whether they help or hurt, and practical tools you can use to shift the dynamics in your relationship starting immediately. So don't miss part two. It's packed with hands-on advice, mindset shift, and a few aha moments we're still thinking about. Believe me. See you next week on Coach Me. That's a wrap.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Coach Me. Got a question or something you want us to coach through? Slide into our DMs or drop us a message. We might feature it on the next episode.
And hey, don't forget to hit follow. Your future self will thank you. Just one more quick note. Everything we share here is based on our own experiences and coaching tools. It's not medical or mental health advice. So if you're struggling or need support, please reach out to a qualified professional. You've got this and we've got you. See you next time on Coach Me. That's it.